Number 1B.
Okay, so is this a law that Mrs. Eddy laid down when she said, well, once the divine law has been stated, the postulate of error must appear? As if she would say, we will never understand the somethingness of something until we have understood the nothingness of nothing. So this is the common denominator of what we will show the whole week through, that there is no dualism, and that every right idea, when it is coming into the forefront, that it meets its opposite, and that has been so all through the Bible. When we think about the Bible, I just run quickly through another parameter, namely the Bible, and show quickly, very superficially, the 7,000 or the 6,000 year periods in a way that shows on one side the idea coming up. And the moment the idea comes up, the opposite error is rising its head too. What is that Bible story? Is it just one pathway, a rosy pathway? Is it just telling about how wonderful God is and what a wonderful creation he has created and how wonderful everything is? Actually, it seems just the other way around, that the positive signs of God revealing himself in his true nature takes rather a small part in the text, but that the uncovering of its opposite takes on a much larger part. Let's quickly run through it, those thousand-year periods which you already know, just to show those two sides. In the first thousand-year period, we have that wonderful description of the 7 days of creation, of a holy creation, and right afterwards the second record of creation with Adam and with Lamech killing each other and killing right and left and so on. And you see a very opposite of true creation came up, the destruction of creation. Or you take the second thousand-year period, you have that wonderful sense, everything goes fine, and then God talks to Noah and says, look here, make an ark, there will be a flood. Why should be a flood if everything goes well? So he makes an ark, he is saved, but we can see that the moment something has been established as a holy man like Noah, that then the very opposite comes up, the flood comes up. And so, for what purpose? Not just for the purpose because to show its opposite, but to show that if you go through that experience and can see through the error, can see through the flood, you always come out on a higher point than where you started. He came out on the Mount Ararat, which was the highest point in his country, symbolizing that every overcoming of a crisis brings us forward, brings us higher, makes us stronger, makes us more secure, and so it is a positive experience and not a negative experience. There does not exist in being a negative experience. This is just not possible in the oneness of being. It's just not possible. It's only that the human mind makes that distinction and calls something good and something evil and makes that silly distinction, but that does not exist in being. And we jolly well should come now to that point where we don't accept anymore that there is evil and good. So the Bible tells that over and over. We come to the third thousand-year period. Think of the third thousand-year period of that wonderful period where we have Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, where we had Joseph, where we had all those wonderful things of these leaders until they came into the promised land through Moses and through Joshua and through the judges into the promised land. But on that way, it seems that over and over the opposite would pop up. And you have that constantly wandering around in the wilderness, not knowing where to go, where Abraham went out of Ur in Chaldea, not knowing where he will go, not knowing where he will end up, always just having only one hope that he will see the holy city. And so the tribes after Abraham always wandered and wandered, still seeking. It was one great wilderness experience for a whole 1,000 years, going down into Egypt and afterwards coming out of Egypt, then going through the Red Sea, then going 40 years through the wilderness when they just could enter in a few days over the Jordan into the Promised Land. But God said, no, first you have to be purified properly. You can't enter the Promised Land with all the error you have within yourself. You first have to get rid of your sense of duality. And so they had to go through the wilderness and finally over Jordan. And even when they were over Jordan, they had to fight right and left against the various cities, against the various tribes that were sitting in that Holy Land until they could possess it and finally say, now we have found it, now we possess it. We can see that always there is a great vision going on first, and then afterwards the very opposite is coming up. And we have to prove to ourselves that we really believe and understand the reality of the spiritual, so that there is no duality in us, so that we are not afraid of duality, that we are not afraid of evil, that we just see that if something disharmonious, humanly disharmonious, rises up, that that is only a great opportunity for going forward and for letting science purify a situation. Or we come to the 4,000 period, which is so big. We had that 4,000 period, and for the first time we find here Samuel as a priest, as a theocratic governor of the universe. The first one and the only one, so to say. And then see the true government, until that government then really was attacked by a false sense of government. We want a king. We want to have a king as other countries have. And so the government, the theocratic government, fell to pieces, and we had the most horrible government in Israel, rotten kings, rotten priests, corrupt churches, all that was happening in that country, constantly having foreign nations coming in and overflooding them, making them to pay tribute to the other kings, an awful situation, crisis after crisis. The northern part, Israel, had to go into the Assyrian captivity, the southern part, Judah later on, into Babylonian captivity. Well, that was not a rosy pathway, was it? Certainly not. Huh? The temple being destroyed, and finally they could return. Having those wonderful, first that wonderful theocratic king, and then all those prophets telling them what would come on them, telling them even it's a good thing if you are brought down into captivity. That's the only way you will be saved. Then you will come to reason, and then in captivity you can think out what you have been doing wrong, what was wrong in your government, what was wrong in your theology, and when that had been purified, they could go back again and so establish a better government, sense of government. Or you come to the 5,000-year period of Jesus, what happened? You had this wonderful example of Jesus that for the first time would show us really that life is eternal, that death is only a belief, that, as I say today, death is only another disease, so that death has no reality, no existence. And the moment he showed that wonderful thing, you had crucifixion, you had persecution, people put before the lions and all that, that wasn't nice things either. So that was a crisis also. But it was always there to test really the understanding that one has gained in the vision. And so you come to the 6,000 period, which is such an interesting period. Again, suddenly that situation where people began to realize that the church is not the only source of knowledge, that science should be the source of knowledge, where the first universities were established, where learning was established, where reading and writing was established, where printing was established, all that positive thing, then all the research work in the fundamentals, fundamental research work all through the 16th and 17th century. All this very great development, or the French period of, in English, the Enlightenment, then all the big natural scientists. Again, you had the crisis, namely that the whole thought was turned away from religion, from God, so that there was no more any need for a God. The Cartesian concept was that you can calculate the whole universe in a mathematical way, that the universe runs like a big machine, that it runs like a big clock. You can calculate everything if you know the assumptions, you can calculate, you don't need God anymore. And that was perhaps the atmosphere of the last century, and in this century we certainly suddenly find again, because we come to the end of that 1,000-year period, the solution of it. And the solution of it is that the investigation into matter, into atomic forces, has brought the thinkers to the point where they begin to feel that behind all that material force, the atomic universe, must be another universe. And slowly they begin to introduce the concept of God again, that behind there must be a transcendental reality. They call it either a metaphysical reality or a transcendental reality, so that more and more people are talking that only the spiritual realm is the real realm. This is quite something that we witness today. Now, is this something that accords with the teaching of Christian Science? I take another parameter and take the textbook. And we know how the textbook leads thought gently from prayer to a right attitude towards reality, whatever that reality is, towards a right reality, showing in Atonement and Eucharist that you can't touch that right reality except you let go of a false concept of what you think reality is. The divine must overcome the human at every point, but only in that way actually a step forward can be done, the chapter of marriage. But then Mrs. Eddy lets really the cat out of the bag and comes to the fourth chapter, where she says, look here, you must realize that the only reality there is spirit. There is no other reality. It's something that you could do one nice evening when you don't know what to study. You could take perhaps the textbook with the references on spirit, for instance, and just go quickly through that fourth chapter and look up what Mrs. Eddy says, just in those sentences where she uses spirit. And you will be surprised that she speaks to us today, to this crisis which we go through today. 100 years ago, she has shown that a time will come in the future, and that future after 120 years has come. And let me just quickly pinpoint what she is saying about it. She says in that chapter about spirit, first of all, that there is only one infinite spirit. That's her main tone. One infinite spirit. Therefore, only ideas which are actually the counterfeit of material things, that only ideas alone are spiritual and are ideas of spirit and constitute the universe. Then the main great point is, therefore, we should not mingle spirit and matter. Therefore, at this point, I can see in the mentality of all of us, always that still that tendency that in consciously or unconsciously, we try to spiritualize matter or materialize spirit. That this mingling, that spiritualism is deep-seated within us. And that the necessity of this hour, in order to overcome that crisis, is that we are not trying to mix matter with spirit and spirit with matter, that we are well aware and constantly more aware that only one thing is real, and that is spirit. Then she goes on and says, this is the basis on which Jesus worked. He only worked really on that basis, with that one spirit. And then in the third part, we are absolutely astonished what she is saying. There she speaks about the future. Now we must realize that she wrote that chapter more than 100 years ago, so that the future is now. That what she says about the future is actually the present situation. What does she say? She says, the understanding and recognition of spirit must finally come. Finally. Just listen always to the tone of spirit and love, that spiritual and finality of it. It must finally come. She said, the spiritualization will finally follow. It wasn't at her time. Can you see? She talks to us today. Because what? Because of what? Love is spirit. Now we know that we are approaching that 7,000 year period of love, where love wants to draw the whole universe into a new paradigm, namely the paradigm of spirit, that there is only one reality, that of spirit. So it's love, not mind, that pushes us forward into spirit. Now it's the other way around, that the finality, the final fact, that we take the end for the beginning, that love attracts, so to say, the whole universe towards the point of spirit. That it doesn't give any peace and any rest until the universe gives in, until the universe goes down to on their knees and gives in and says, yes, finally we see that reality is spirit. At the moment they are at the point of seeing, yes, reality is transcendental, but they don't know yet what that transcendental is. Many know it and speak about spirit, as I will show you. She says in that spiritualization period, before error will be destroyed, wholly, can you hear again, love, wholly, what happens until then? She says, there will be interruption of the general material routine. Somehow we have a feeling that the general material routine is now out of gear, huh? That something has happened in the world that is no more running according to the machine that we can calculate in advance, that everything is upside down a little bit. That she says, earth will become dreary and desolate. Isn't that so? If you think about the Sahara and about many other places, about the rainwoods, Brazil, the rainforest and so on, the earth will become dreary and desolate. The darkest hour precedes the dawn. Again, a hope, and says, don't be bothered about it. The darkest hour is not the end of it. It precedes the dawn. There is a dawn. We only have to see what the dawn is. So she says, until the final spiritualization of all things comes. Again, the final spiritualization of all things, not only of religious thinking, of all things. The spiritualization of whatever is called forces or matter, or organic life, etc., etc., must be finally be seen as forms of spirit. It only depends on our ignorance if we see it or if we don't see it. She says, now, the material world is becoming the arena of conflicting forces. So when she wrote it, it's really so that from that point on, really in this century, we can see that world is coming into, where have I been? Becoming the arena of conflicting forces. So she says, now The material world is becoming the arena of conflicting forces. We witness that, don't we? As never before. As never before. On one side, discord and dismay. Yeah, a lot of discord, a lot of dismay in this world. On the other side, science and peace. Don't we feel a wonderful sense of peace when we touch science? When we touch that wonderful standpoint of St. John, wonderful sense of peace comes on us. These disturbances, crisis, huh? These disturbances will continue. They will continue. She doesn't say, look here, we wash them away. You know, now Christian science comes and just washes us under the table. No, she says, they will continue until the end of error. That's always the point. It must come to the end of error. The mental fermentation has begun and will continue until all error of belief yield to understanding. So the answer is again, understanding. Spirit, love, huh? Spirit, love. Spirit, understanding of spirit, is the only love there is. Love wants us to understand reality. The divine scientist will endure to the end. The divine scientist, says, will endure to the end. Not the material scientist. During this final conflict, again, a final conflict, wicked mind will endeavor to accomplish more evil. But Christian scientists will hold crime in check. This is a big point. She demands that Christian scientists do their job. What is their job? And we'll make a big point out of it during the week, that Christian scientists must be able to handle evil scientifically. And not just say, well, there is no evil, God is good, God is all that, therefore there is no evil. But that she says, no, we will have to handle evil scientifically and hold crime in check. Then, at the end of it, she says, divine spirit will dominate all matter. And she talks about that final stage. She says, all matter will disappear before the supremacy of spirit. Again, you have that the aim is given. Huh? The aim is given for us. It's always spirit. Now, we have seen it through various parameters, and we'll see more than that. Since sickness and death will give everlasting place to divine spirit. Once we have reached the understanding of divine spirit, I don't see where sin, sickness and death would have any place, any channel, any possibility. It's not possible. That's what St. John could see. See, that's why he could handle in that third part sin, sickness, death and personal sense also. So that he handled it to the utmost. So finally, man is found in the likeness of spirit. This is what Mrs. Eddy shows in that fourth chapter and gives us, so to say, the direction and the aim in which to work. So we can't say we don't know from where we come and whither we go. We know from where we came. We had now various parameters showing we come always to the point that spirit is the only, that there is only one reality, the oneness of being, and that is spirit. It says Jesus of Nazareth was the most scientific man. Here, at this point, she depicts him as a scientist, not as a jolly good fellow, huh? Not as a helper and a healer and a good surgeon, but as was the most scientific man that ever trod the globe. Why was it that? He plunged beneath the material surface of things. You see, he plunged beneath the material surface of things. So the material is only a surface of things, and found the spiritual cause. Gosh, can you see? He found in spirit, really, the cause of everything. Even the cause of the Big Bang. And I will show you that later on. So that we know what people call the arrow of evolution. That the arrow of evolution goes right to the point of spiritualization, of final spiritualization, and finding that actually spirit is the only. Can we see what Mrs. Eddy therefore said? That she said, the education of the future will be instruction in spiritual science. In spiritual science. And now listen, against what? Against the material sciences. against the symbolic sciences, against the counterfeit sciences. She uses those three adjectives in order to depict really what the sciences of today are, that they are material science, that they are symbolic science, because they never go to realities, they are only symbolizing reality, they haven't found the spiritual cause, they are only symbols, material symbols for a spiritual fact, and they are counterfeit science. They counterfeit the spiritual and present themselves as material science. Quite a thing. Can we see why in the Bible there is only one writer in the whole Bible that says that God is spirit? And that is St. John, which we investigated. Can't I go further? Can I go further? Now, let me tell perhaps one or the other thing that is symptomatic for the present age. When we read books of the great physicists or cosmologists or nuclear physicists, we read books like those well-known men like David Bohm or like Paul Davies or Hawkins or Prigogine or Weizsäcker or Heisenberg or Dietfurt, which you don't know, Dietfurt, a German one who you may not know here in England, in English. When one reads them, they all talk about investigating really more and more the nature of the material universe, coming or going further, deeper and further down to deeper levels. And naturally, in their language, they tell what they do. An ordinary person cannot quite understand what they say. And then one goes to the last chapter and to the conclusions, and then suddenly one begins to understand again what they say. And usually in the last chapter, usually the last paragraph, they say, well, after all, we can't go really much further without the assumption that there is something that is called God. Practically every one of them. And so, let me just tell quickly what one of these modern forward thinkers called Professor Dietfurt. It's perhaps nice that in England, where you don't know him, you also get the slant what is going on the other side of the ocean. In his recent lectures, and he said, for instance, I put it down, he said, evolution is directed towards a spiritual principle. He says, the world will be spiritualized. Did we hear something in the textbook that resembles it? He says, the cosmos will be resolved into a spiritual principle. Is that something we learn in Christian Science? He says, the man of the future will be the embodiment of a spiritual principle. Isn't that what Christian Science says? That is what I want to say tonight. Just to see that we are at a very important point in the development of the universal thought and consciousness, that now in the whole universe something is focusing towards the one point, that spirit is the only reality. Okay, now I shut up.